Well, that's a really good point, because it brings me to a question about technology and security. I agree with you that the mobile device can make the transacting environment much more secure for all the reasons
sure.
that you just said. So why don't we just go there? Why can't we just skip over all the stuff that we're currently doing and invest in accelerating the move to mobile?
Well, I think everything moves to parallel. And I think what we're doing from a foundational standpoint, mobile is just another device that will work against the same infrastructure. So we're making sure, if you look at what we're doing with, in Meshkal, we call it MDES, our digital enablement environment. It's making sure in an industry standard way that every device can have its own unique token or credential, including, I always have the box on the whiteboard used to, you know, the as of yet unimagined edge device, right? So how do we enable it? You got to remember, a mobile phone is a 7-8-year-old form factor. Many would argue, we're just talking about this Mobile World Congress, it's completely maxed out. You know, when your big play is it's lighter, and it's lighter is because it's 130 grams, not 132 grams, you know you've maximized the form factor. I think that's why people are so excited about wearables and everything else, because a smartphone is a profoundly uninteresting object, right? So I think what we also have to recognize is getting the digital foundations right. So what is the credential that gets stored? What is the key and cryptology that's associated with this? The only way to make data truly safe is to make it useless if it's ever used out of context. And the foundation we have for that with EMV is saying whether it's circuitry we've stuck on a card or we're using the chips in the device, you need to have an underlying cryptology that applies to all this. So it allows us in a very broad-based global way apply not only the best current state technology, but also future-proof it. So we're already working with things like elliptical curve cryptology. So if quantum computer ever comes to the fore, or if we run out of key size space on the RSA keys we're using, we can slide into a yet even more impenetrable cryptological standard that the whole industry can use against it. So there really is no versus here, right? It is, you know, offensive almost to certain consumer bases to say you got to buy a $700 smartphone in order to have access to secure payments. And we're not going to do anything for you otherwise. It's essential that we secure the entire system. But as we secure the system, do it in a way that whether the transaction is coming off of the bespoke chip on a card or it's being delivered from the chipsets in the phone or online, you're getting the same security, the same cryptology, the same transaction, and that'll allow the transition for it. So our objective, and this is a big part of MasterPass in-app and everything else we're doing, is to saying, okay, if in the plastic world I could type for a card-not-present, relatively unsecured transaction but has value in some environments, I could swipe, which is static information, or I could dip, which gives me a full key and cryptology around that transaction. That's how I have my plastic interface will be, and we need to make sure that everything is moving to the most secure for that. With my device, whether I tap it, I use the display, I push it through an app or I blow it through a browser, we're providing the same amount of security and certainty around the transactions, in fact, greater than we could do in the physical world. But all of this needs to move in tandem, and the benefit we can provide is all of this is backward compatible, so the investments we make today can be leveraged for enabling the devices that are there. But, you know, I think it's critical we both establish a global standard around cryptology. We provide all consumers access to that, even if it requires we have to ship them a card with a chip glued onto it, because that's the bespoke device to enable it, and then enable the rest of their devices. But the point in time where everyone will have access to sophisticated handsets with biometrics and everything else, that it will come. It will come relatively fast. But it'll just be one of the access devices we'll need to provide. I still think you're going to need a specially accessed device for it, which is what the card represents.
But the developing world that we spoke about earlier may leapfrog over a card environment, even though they don't have the fancy phones. But
absolutely.
Phones become the way in which transacting happens.
Yeah, we see that happening all the time, right? And that's why we're very clear it's talking about what the transaction is rather than which edge device is being used for that transaction. But again, the same principles apply. It's just being thrown in a different way. So what we're seeing, and this is actually surprising to us, a lot of the movement which is happening around, I'll call it real financial inclusion, tends to be clustered in the more urban environments. Those urban environments already have a density of existing acceptance. So when I usually talk about, you know, I think, you know, developed versus emerging world is one of those convenient fictions we tell ourselves to hold on to the delusion the world's an orderly place, right? That doesn't explain Jakarta. It doesn't explain Sao Paulo. It doesn't explain Johannesburg. Right, the difference between the developed and the emerging world is usually the front and back of the same cap. Right, it's populations that happen to live in places and they interact all the time. So one of the biggest applications of mobile payment technology we're seeing in developing markets is MPOS. Mm-hmm. As all of these merchants want to be able to access directly the payment credentials that the affluent people in their market already have. One of the interesting things we're seeing in all of the government benefit distribution is the request for companion cards to enable things like cash out in ATM. So we really worked hard, and I think, again, this idea that there's a versus, the way I always think about it is the power is the network, and there's any number of access devices we can provide. For some environments, just solely using the mobile because I'm going to receive my benefits electronically and I'm going to use it for bill pay or transfer into another type of account, that's great. If I want to add a card to it for backward compatibility with an existing infrastructure in there, we're seeing huge desire for that. So that's what I'm saying is I don't see any versus there. We really tried hard. I think sometimes in the industry, you know, the idea that a prepaid card with a killer mobile app was somehow different from a mobile money account that may happen to have a companion card with it. Right? In our view, it's all the same thing. And we got to stop talking about cards versus mobile and start talking about accounts and transaction methods. And as we think about it that way, then it gets back to the base principles we talked about earlier. What makes that consumer's life better? And if I'm in Manila and the best thing for me is to get my cross-border remittance directly on my mobile phone and then use a plastic card to cash it out at the ATM so I'm not getting 10% ripped off or just service fee in order to do it, that's a huge consumer benefit.
Right.
Right. And so that's what we're trying to say is these are all tools at our disposal. And it really is saying what makes the most sense in a geographic context. And even when we're seeing as many of the first wave mobile money programs that thought it would be all mobile to mobile are working with MasterCard now for companion card programs because it simply adds more stickiness, more payments, and more utility for that. And much of what we saw really wasn't a full financial inclusion environment. It was more a specific thing like a domestic transfer transaction that we were doing with a cash in and cash out at either side. And so I think that's really where the utility comes from. So in every specific location and for given consumer segments, whether it's card-based or mobile-based or anything else, will really be based on the utility it provides for them, but particularly in urban areas. We see that. And one other element, because I do think a lot of what we do is as much psychology as the actual transaction and the behavior for that. Great learning in the Philippines. Worked with a partner to stand up a relatively sophisticated mobile-only environment, particularly in the rural areas. Limited usage. We were not unique in that experience, but very limited usage. When we enabled a set of that population with a companion card, the usage shot up of the mobile side because it did two things, one of which is it was that physical token that said this is a legitimate payment product, and we shouldn't recognize how powerful that is. But also, it was a status. It was a sense of inclusion that you had something that was as good as everyone else. So, again, I also think there's a huge amount of psychology around payments, and it's not – so much what we can enable, but how do we enable things that are profoundly meaningful for those consumers? So that's why I'm saying it'll be tipped in different ways, but I actually think it's more of a account and transaction delivery method than a question of cards versus mobile phone.
So I agree with that, but that does suggest a very complicated environment on the back end to make it all seamless for the consumer because
right.
they're moving between channels and devices and cards and everything else. And it's up to you to make sure that that all works. What is the implication to the standard, though? Because that suggests that there is a standard that really enables all of that to happen on the part of the consumer, but also the merchant, correct?
Well, what we get from consumers over and over again, and merchants also, is make all of this stuff work together. And if there is a almost defining or universal characteristic of most of the failed initiatives I've seen, it's because you're asking consumer to balkanize too much of their financial life for a new, too narrowly defined value proposition or application, right? And this has been a universal truth. You know, I go back to here in the Northeast, it's EasyPass, right? Having a specially transponder that let me blow through the tolls at 55 miles an hour that every once in a while hits my MasterCard to top it back up, that is a fabulous consumer experience, right? We don't want to build all those things. We don't want to have all of those things. But as a consumer, if it took me four steps to feed that, I'd probably still be in the cash lane, right? So it is that bringing it back together and enabling all the unique and bespoke environments to constantly tie back to, again, the benefits of the guaranteed MasterCard transaction and having it work together. So I think there is elements of standards we want to make sure is there. I think there's a lot that we can build on. I think EMV provides a great standard for cryptology that everyone understands. It's one that we will continue to advance. We have roadmaps through 2025, 2030 of how we can continue to increase the security of the cryptology that everyone can base on. I think the interface standards are there. What we're doing with MasterPass to enable easy checkout was designed from the start to enable full backward compatibility with the credentials and the handling of the credentials that merchants were used to. What we're doing with the in-app payments, again, to allow merchants to easily access that store with a different front-end or consumer experience for that. And that'll extend to in-store where, you know, I can't dip my phone. I can't swipe it. It doesn't fit. So the ability to use either an NFC wire or another element to have that, that brings it together for the consumer. It's great, too, because I can get a single set of controls and alerts. Right? Tell me when a transaction is over this level. Remember, maximizing the interactivity that's there. Then it really doesn't matter if I was using my PC at work or a tablet or my phone or the card. I get the same alert, same controls, same account, same security on that. So, again, I think that what everyone's asking for is if and how we make all of this work together. You know, if you look at a few years ago, if you're having this conversation maybe 5 or 6 years ago, I'm sure one of the things we'd all be pressing on is, hey, the transit systems, they ingest cash. They have a payment mechanism. They have millions of consumers daily. Isn't Oyster and Octopus going to turn into the next big payments network? Whereas the answer, driven from consumers, turned out to be completely the inverse. I can now use my PayPass-enabled card or device or anything natively on Transit of London. In the U.S., Chicago, Las Vegas, Philadelphia. I grew up in Philadelphia. SEPTA is not the cutting edge of much of anything. They're adopting open-loop, contactless payments because, this with great affection, because it's a better experience than having to either use cash or have a separate and segregated instrument for that. So I think that really is the big theme, and that's what will win out are the things that bring it together more than fragment that consumer experience.
So one final question before we move into some of the scoop from Mobile World Congress, and it relates to omnichannel. That is really one of the big buzzwords in retail. And it goes to your point of accounts and transactions and consumers moving fluidly, you know, within different worlds. What's the biggest obstacle to getting that done if you're a merchant? And how are you talking to merchants about getting it done?
Yeah, we're working closely with a lot of our merchant partners, particularly some of the merchants that we've worked with for years in their co-branded portfolio, because we're already deeply ingrained with their most loyal customers, providing payment mechanisms for that. So we've, again, worked with merchants for years to help them merchandise better. In the plastic world, it was usually based on co-brand cards and other things we did for them. One of the biggest things we see merchants doing is pulling together what was tended to be a segregated environment for their first-generation e-commerce. right? That 18-year-old, 19-year-old metaphor for e-commerce checkout pages, and saying, how do I bring that right into the aisle of my store? Likewise, we're working with them to say, okay, I'll need to have a till, but how can I free my associates from guarding the till to allow to be out merchandising and selling with consumers in that? And that convergence is really where we're seeing it happening, both in the aisle itself as we move away from this choke point at the till to allow them, and we're using MPOS for that, we're using in-app acceptance, beacons and other things ply into doing that, and also allow me to extend that aisle seamlessly through all the devices that my consumers have. So we're working on those frameworks today, which is at till, in-aisle, in-app, online, is one integrated shopping experience. We can do it now from the payments standpoint, and now we're working with merchants to align the interfaces they have, but we can provide the mechanisms to support that merchandising. And again, that's driven from a very simple thing. It's exactly what consumers are looking for.
Well, you're right, because what consumers want is to use the same way to pay regardless of where they're buying things.
Right.
And at the moment, that's not a seamless experience.
Right. And I think, again, they deserve that promise the more we can bring that together.